Poet Carl Sandburg captured well the human condition. There's an eagle in me that wants to soar, and a hippopotamus in me that wants to wallow in the mud. That's a paradox. Seemingly contradictory statements that are nonetheless true. Paradoxes have been called the atoms of philosophy and the particles of theology. The Bible is the ultimate source book for the greatest paradoxical statements in the sphere of human thinking. God doesn't look at life the way we do. God declares in Isaiah 55, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." It stands to reason that if there's a God in heaven, which there is, that God would look at things differently from us, from a different vantage and perspective. That results in paradoxes, statements that appear to be contradictory, but are actually true. Back in the late 1800s, an entire book was written on the subject. It was called Practical Paradoxes, or Truth in Contradictions. The title of Henry Clay Trumbull's introduction was The Comfort of Christian Paradoxes. And this is how he began. The law of the Christian life is a paradox. It's made up of seeming contradictions. All its teachings are contrary to the common opinions of man. According to this law, giving is getting. Scattering is gaining. Holding is losing. Having nothing is possessing all things. Dying is living. It's the one who is weak who is strong. Happiness is found when it's no longer sought. And the clearest sight is of the invisible. And things which are not bring to naught things that are. Ah, truly comforting words. Baron von Hugel observed that the deeper we get into reality, the more numerous will be the questions we cannot answer. And when we can't find the answers to questions, we're forced to seek God. But we're terribly uncomfortable with unanswered questions, uncertainty, and the either-or, with paradoxes. This week for our chapel series, we'll be looking at the role of paradox in the Christian life, considering how paradoxes are one way that God forms us, if we let them. During this recent time of having to shelter in place, a friend mentioned to me that it felt like she was always having to say no to her kids. Things that were normally okay to do were now forbidden or dangerous or just not even possible. We're so used to the freedom of making choices and being able to follow through with the decisions we make. Not so in the midst of a pandemic, where choices are few, and the response to so many of our options is no. So why did I buy a 2020 planner anyway? What was the point? I moved into a new neighborhood in February, and I was so looking forward to getting to know my neighbors, having church friends and students over, hosting gatherings, you know, practicing hospitality. But I haven't had the freedom to do that for almost 3 months. It's been a real loss for me. Several of my English students flew back to their home countries almost overnight. Another huge loss for me because they were my friends, not just my income. How about you? What are your losses? What are people saying no to in your life? What are the questions you're asking that seem to have no answers? How are we to be still and know that God is present, as we just sang in the psalm this morning? How do we find contentment in these days when we have little freedom and it seems that everything is going wrong in our world? How do we find joy when a beloved classmate has been murdered? The Apostle Paul embodied paradoxical living as he encouraged the church in Philippi that he had learned how to be content with whatever he had and in all circumstances. In chapter 4, Paul said, "I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I've learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it's with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little. For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." We just heard similar words to this from Habakkuk. These past few months, actually, I've been rereading, kind of dwelling in this little book of Habakkuk. Yeah, I know it's not everybody's go-to reading, but it speaks deeply to my heart as I'm grieving various losses. And it's also a book of paradoxes. What could have gone more wrong for the Israelites? Again, they'd been overrun time and again by enemy forces. The crops had failed. The livestock were either dead or had fled. Habakkuk wrestles with God, but also pays attention to the losses and names them. He doesn't sugarcoat the losses, but voices his own grief and the deep grief of his people, which invites us to voice our own personal griefs and losses, and the losses and griefs of our people. In chapter 3, verse 17, we read what Habakkuk had to say about life at that time. It was grim. Lots to grumble about, right? Everything was going wrong, and he names it pretty clearly. "Even though the fig trees have no blossoms, and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails, and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty." But after lots of grumbling to God and naming his losses, Habakkuk chooses to make a declaration of faith and trust in verse 18. "Yet." So he had said, even though he named his losses. And then he says, "Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful. I will take joy in the God of my salvation." He makes a choice to be joyful in the midst of terrible circumstances. And then in verse 19, Habakkuk acknowledges who is in control, who gives him strength, and where his contentment should lie. "The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes me as sure-footed as a deer, able to tread upon the heights." Echoing the opening lines of Psalm 46 that we sang earlier, this final verse of Habakkuk, in the midst of impending destruction, sees the prophet expressing confidence that the Lord will prevail over the enemy. The entire third chapter is a sublime song dedicated to the chief musician, and therefore intended to be used in the worship of God, naming our losses and making statements of trust and faith are a part of worship of the God who is our refuge and strength. That our losses are actually an essential part of our spiritual formation is one of those paradoxes of our Christian faith. That losing is gaining. Seemingly contradictory and yet actually true. As we learn to name our losses and to grieve them, allowing the Holy Spirit time and space to minister to us, we grow in our faith and trust and contentment. I'd say that's a gain. Back in April, when churches all over the world were wondering how to celebrate Easter during a pandemic, some even considering postponing Easter celebrations until a better time, Anglican Archbishop of Canada, Linda Nichols, eloquently wrote, "We do not celebrate Easter because life is going well. We celebrate Easter and our risen Lord to immerse ourselves in the truths of God's world. That evil, pain, and human sin are not stronger than God's love for us. That we follow one who knew this world and showed us the way to live in it, in faith and unity with God. That we have a hope that gives courage to face the present circumstances, good or bad, and walk together trusting God. Let us prepare for a season of silence.